Hello there, listener. This is the Casturbaris. No, it's not.
Ah.
I'll start again.
Can't say that on TV.
Ah. That's the end of it. Hello, listener. This is the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. Here's my co-host, Brian Terranova.
That's me.
That is you. Indeed it is. No James this week. James fans, I'm afraid he's being serviced by his butler or something. I don't know. Don't take that the wrong way. Just realised what I said there. There's no sexual connotation intended there at all. Hey, Brian.
Yes.
That's you? Yeah, Brian.
That's me.
Or as Omega might say, Brian, is that you? Speaking of whom, in news that probably outclasses class, as it were, because it's even more difficult to actually get your head round than the idea of a Doctor Who spin-off set in Coal Hill School called Class for young adults.
Yeah.
Doctor. <that's... laughs> K-9 is to battle Omega in a movie called Timequake.
Go on.
No. So the story goes. K-9, the world's most famous robot dog, traverses the dimensions of space and time to become the latest robot star of the big screen. Having made his TV debut nearly 40 years ago in the 1977 Doctor Who TV serial The Invisible Enemy, K-9 went on to become one of the most iconic characters from the BBC series. A new look, high-tech K-9 for today's cinema is being prepared for film stardom. The film, K-9, Timequake, has been written by one of K-9's original creators, Bob Baker. A renowned writer of classic Doctor Who serials, Bob went on to co-write with Nick Park the Oscar and BAFTA-winning Wallace and Gromit series of fan shorts, film shorts even, as well as the feature film The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. The new K-9 will be appearing in a multi-million dollar movie which promises to be a great action adventure set in deep space. The film will be full of dashing heroes and heroines, androids, monstrous aliens, and an ultimate foe who will also be familiar to Doctor Who fans everywhere, the megalomaniac Omega. The film is currently slated for release in 2017, which will be K-9's 40th birthday. Yeah, words fail me, really, to describe exactly how I feel about this extremely unlikely turn of events.
I'm still stuck on multi-million dollar for a K-9 movie.
Yeah, but to be honest, you say that, I'm actually still stuck on the fact that no one seems to know whether it's K-9 or K-9.
God.
Even after nearly 40 years. So this was announced a couple of days ago over the weekend on the 24th. So that was Saturday, wasn't it? And, I don't want to completely crap on this because, you know, K-9's had his spin-off TV series. Bob Baker has done phenomenally well with Wallace and Gromit. My kids were watching, they watched The Wrong Trousers last night and were absolutely transfixed. They very rarely say nothing when they're watching TV, and they absolutely loved that. And this morning they watched The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I thought I'd just like keep the momentum, the Wallace and Gromit momentum going. And again, they got through most of the movie without, other than just asking a couple of questions. So there's no doubt he can do the job at a script level, but I just find the whole idea of K-9 in his own movie and fighting a Time Lord, or a man introduced as the founder of Time Lord Society, who's, you know, returned as well in the 1980s. Omega, of all people, as the villain, it just seems utterly mad.
Yes, I'm still hung up on the fact though. Like, what are their plans? I guess for this movie. I mean, you got K-9 fighting Omega, and they talk about having a whole host of other heroes and so on. But Last we left K9, from what I understand, it was an Australian children's TV program. So are they ditching that? Is this going to be a more grown-up version? Is Omega actually going to be a threat or a joke? Like, what is he going to be? Are there going to be kids that are K9's sidekick? Or is K9 running around with, like, Space Rangers or something like that, going to take down a Time Lord, as you say, which...
Who doesn't exist in our universe.
Yeah.
So we understand. So how they're going to deal with that.
Not that Omega really needs to make a return back to Doctor Who or anything, but that kind of puts a bit of a damper on that ever actually happening now that he's being used in a K9 film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're going to, they also talked about like a more high-tech K9. Is it going to be the one from that kids show, or are they redesigning the dog again?
I imagine it's probably the one from the kids show with a further sort of cinematic redesign. That's usually what happens, isn't it? Things get tweaked for the cinema. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's that, podcasterite.
We should have started with that's that and just let it go from there.
are we okay with podcasterites, do you think?
Sure.
Podcasterites. I think I'm okay with podcasterites. I think I might have used it in last week's the bump when we put on Audio Boom and on the website. So incidentally, if you're listening to this on Audio Boom or iTunes or Stitcher.com, you can the entire archive is available on Audio Boom going back two or three years, and we've got the www.thepodcast.co.uk, which is kind of mine and Brandon James's little continuation of our special segments of a website we used to be associated with. It continues to this day at podcast.co.uk. Now, shall we go into the main feature and then come to our other piece of disgusting news, or do you want to do our other piece of discussable news first?
No, I think it's best to do the main feature.
The main feature, The Woman Who Lived. In which, this is Doctor Who Series 9, Episode 6, so we are halfway through the run already, which is quite interesting. We've kind of had four stories, because I'm pretty certain this isn't a two-part story. There's only one linking character, aspect/character beyond the Doctor.
Yeah, it's a loose two-parter, yeah.
Yeah. So we see the Doctor encountering a Shilder, who now refers to herself as me, or Lady Me, and when I say me, I don't mean Christian Corley, I mean just quote me, unquote. And she's living in, I think it was the 18th or 19th century, as a highway woman with a big house, and involved in the slightly insidious scheme of a man who looked like a Disney lion.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I really thought they were going for a Beauty and the Beast kind of thing there, which it didn't thankfully seem to go there, but it seemed like, oh, okay, just the latest kind of borrow. Which I guess they sort of, in a sense, just visually borrowed the gag there, you know. But no, they didn't thankfully take the story, which is good.
I think it's probably quite hard to make a person look like a lion, actually. You've probably got two options. You've probably got like the option that they had in Doctor Who, or you've got what happened in Phoenix Nights, which you probably won't be aware of. This Phoenix Nights is a Peter Kay show from about 2001, 2002. And one of the main characters was... it's set around a social club. Brian knows, despite being American, Brian knows what a social club is because he's been to mine a couple of times. And basically what happens in this club is that like they hold a fete day when they reopen it after a fire. And one of the characters uses industrial aerosol paints for face painting and ends up permanently looking like a big cat.
Oh my God.
I think that I was a little bit iffy with it, and I think the lights possibly cheapened it, to be honest with you, whether intentionally or not. I just think the lights looked a bit like Lego lights, you know what
okay.
I mean.
Lego lights.
You know, like Lego pieces that illuminate with lights behind them.
Oh, right, okay.
And you have those translucent, like, yellowy pieces. Yeah, that's how the lights looked to me. They were very square and seemed very rigid, the lights from the Leonian guy's eyes were. But do you know what? I didn't watch The Woman Who Lived when it aired. as I was going out with my wife to celebrate her birthday. So I missed it until last night, Sunday evening. And although I hadn't seen any reviews, I had noticed a lot of comments on my Facebook feed and on Twitter, saying it wasn't very good. So I was kind of came to it with kind of middling expectations, and I was certainly pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it. Okay. Awkward silence.
Okay. It wasn't bad. I will say that it was, you know, it had a couple things going for it. Like, I really think, this is going to sound so rude, because I don't mean this rudely to the actress by any means, but having Clara not be in it really worked for the story.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped the story feel fresh. It wasn't bogged down with her character or the needs of her character to be a different character each week.
And that underlying question that you always have is, why isn't she at school?
Yeah.
Why isn't she at work?
Yeah, well, you know, and
then that's something that series, we can blame series 8 for that, because she was almost always at the beginning of an episode at school.
Yeah.
And now she's not.
Well, it's funny, too. I was talking with a friend of mine who was saying, you know, before this series had started, that she had heard that they were finally going to be putting an end to the Doctor picking up the companions, you know, every Wednesday or something stupid like that. And they were just going to be in the TARDIS forever. And then after the first episode, you know, she was like, well, maybe it's going to happen after this. And so, and then you get to this episode, it's just kind of like, no, it's still happening. Clara's still doing her life, you know, and wanting this other life, and it's tiresome. But it worked here because it gave us an episode without Clara, you know. And unfortunately, again, I don't mean to be rude to Jenna at all. I just think that Clara should have left at the end of season 8 when they had that good farewell for her, rather than be here for season 9. But I don't know. I felt this episode, like last week's episode, was, again, it was like, well, that was good. It wasn't great, and thankfully it wasn't bad, but it wasn't something I would write home about and tell the world, you know, you need to see this, you know? Like, the intro, for instance, you know, and I know that we already knew Ashilda, who I finally remember her name since last podcast, and now we probably have to call her me, you know? Yeah. We knew basically what her history was going to be, or her future, I guess, was going to be, and we knew what was really going to happen in this episode, but, you know, as a writer and a filmmaker, I looked at the intro of this episode and I was kind of like let down, because obviously it was completely obvious who Ashilda was in the beginning. And it was the only person it wasn't obvious to was the Doctor, you know, the audience. I should say the Doctor and the characters in the story, but the audience knew right away, and the Doctor had to piece it all together. So when they revealed her, and there's usually like the opening teaser to an episode, or the cold open, as they will often call them, it's supposed to get you enticed, supposed to give you that, like, whoa, you can't put the theme music there. I want to know what the hell happened. You can't make me wait 30 seconds, you know? But instead, she's like, oh, it's me. And then theme music. And it was just like, well, duh. You know?
Yeah,
so, I don't
some
know.
Direction, I felt, some better, more effective direction could have helped there, couldn't it? Maybe cutting the dialogue down a bit.
Cutting the dialogue down, maybe even having like a body double in for the intro, so that you didn't realize who the actress was. I mean, let's be fair, she's a very distinct looking actress, you know, no matter what you're trying to disguise her as, you know. And then this way, when the reveal came, maybe you could have pulled a hat and a mask off and then shown it was her, and really it would have just been a little bit like, whoa, what a damn good disguise kind of thing. It was lacking. The intro was lacking. That was lacking. The episode, again, like I said, really felt stronger for not having Clara in it. The cinematography, as always, is gorgeous. There were so many shots in this episode that I just thought were tremendous. So hands down to the director and the director of photography and the lighting crew, everybody that worked on that. That's one of the things that's really just been so fantastic in this era of Doctor Who. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really guess I don't have that much else from there. I didn't know the comedian.
Rufus Hound. That was Rufus Hound. He hasn't been a comedian for a long time. He's been a bit of a personality.
Okay.
He's been appearing on, you know, like panel shows and stuff like that for years.
Gotcha.
He was a fixture on one of them. So it's good to see him actually doing. And I think he was in Russell T Davies' Cucumber as well.
Okay.
Or something related to that. So to see him do some proper acting instead of like being basically a straight man in another man's and another comedian's show. Or, you know, it's good to see him doing something like that, because he was really good, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I actually really liked the scene when he was there for his hanging, and I loved how he was stalling with the comedy, and some of the jokes were, you know, I mean, what you'd expect, I guess, but they were funny. It worked. I thought the scene actually worked pretty well there. So, perfect example, I guess I could say, for this episode, in contrast to last episode, was the comedy here was well used.
Yeah.
It wasn't like thrown all over the place. It was well used. It was basically centric to one character.
Yeah. Well, it was the gallows humor was as well sort of personified, wasn't it? Illustrated. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did enjoy that. Like I said, I didn't really know him very well, but I thought that was pretty good and well done. Quite obvious where the chip was going to create the second immortal being. So I guess that's a kind of what my issues were. I don't know if it's because it's getting harder to fool me as I become more used to like film mm-hmm. techniques and so on, or if it's just that they're not really trying so hard to fool you or to make the story have dramatic effect or surprises or anything, or to entice you, I guess is probably the best and worst way to say it, because the intro, Ashilda reveals herself and it's just, oh, okay, yeah, obvious. And then, you know, you see this guy getting ready to be hung and it's kind of like, well, guess I know where this is going.
Yeah, you know.
And it's just, it's hard to sit here anymore and say that these episodes are fantastic. I'm just not walking away from them feeling anything fantastic, but it was still good, if I can say it that way. And we're no stranger to that with the past of Doctor Who. There was plenty of episodes, and I generally mark the 80s for this, but I'm sure there were some in the 60s and 70s too that were just good but not fantastic, you know? And we still enjoy them, so I can't knock it. It was an enjoyable episode, and I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Maisie as well. You know, because it seems like the episode was such a setup as well for her to return yet again.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yes, wouldn't argue with that. I think, as I say, I enjoyed it and I was pleasantly surprised as well. I think the strength in this dialogue, and perhaps this is something we can stretch across the rest of the series, but certainly in this episode, the strength was with the dialogue. There's some really compelling dialogue in there. I think the conversations of the Doctor. Some people were sort of whinging on social media that, you know, we've done this whole what it is to be an immortal thing before. Well, Doctor Who hasn't, really. It's been, you know, what it has to grow old and lose your companions. It's never done what it is to be an immortal, because that was something that happened in Torchwood. It didn't happen on, you know, primetime television on BBC One. So there's that. There's also the fact that it hasn't been looked at for a few years, that thing. And there was a nice different spin on it here as well, because this is obviously the combining that whole immortality thing with the results of the Doctor's actions. And that whole frustration that Ashilda had at having been, you know, awoken up from death and abandoned with the Doctor. And the Doctor saying, well, you know, I was just trying to save you. I thought that was I really liked that. I felt that was a really different way of doing it. And so that aspect of it, you know, in terms of, you know, there's no plot surprise, as you say, but that aspect of it surprised me, and I was really pleased with that. But I think we are, and it's really uncomfortable to say this, I think we are with, we've got such a good Doctor in Peter Capaldi.
Yes.
He owns every scene. He's like a bizarre combination of Sylvester McCoy and Tom Baker in some ways, because he's always moving about, and he's always if he's not moving about, then he's completely got the camera. Whatever he's doing, the camera is looking at him and no one else, even with Jenna Coleman on screen, you know, and she's a fearsomely beautiful woman,
right? Yeah.
And we're just not getting the writing that he deserves, I don't think.
No, I think that's the main thing for me with his Doctor. I really enjoy the heck out of his Doctor. I really love his performance. Certainly, you know, and I said the same thing with Matt Smith, that it's always to those serious moments when they come out that really drive the character home for me. Because while the Doctor's always been quirky and weird and offbeat a little bit, it's when you can get those serious Doctor moments right that get me. You know, the quirky and weird stuff, I hate to say it, but I feel like mostly anybody could do that, because it's just being a bit of silly, you know. But the mix, the blend of it all, he certainly got it. And I do agree, it's just I would love to see him get I don't know, some proper writing, some really damn good stories. And not to say that he hasn't. Between Series 8 and Series 9, there's been a handful of ones that I think are just, like, really fantastic stories. But on the whole, I think he's stuck because they don't know what the heck they're doing with a companion for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rather than try again, they went back to an old one again. And then I think, you know, the writing, particularly, as we've said before, in a Moffat script, it's just, here's an idea. Let's focus on that idea rather than the story that we can make out of it, you know? And it's just like, it doesn't go anywhere. So you have this great doctor, this great actor. You know, like you said, Jenna is a great actress. I'm not trying to knock her as an actress.
No, no,
so
no.
She is a really damn good actress. It's just, I don't think that they're using, I think the issue is they're not using either one of them well. And that's where I keep getting lost in this show, is that I want to really like these characters so much, because that's the way it's always been. But it's so tough. It's so tough because they're just not doing things well with them. So yeah, it would be really nice, if we've been saying for years, to see this show change hands, but to see the Doctor stay, to see a Doctor actually in the new series get written by a different show writer rather than leave with them. I would love to see what somebody could do with him. I would love to see somebody light Capaldi even brighter than he currently is in a story that really just shows off his Doctor, his talents. And, you know, even Clara, if she's going to stick around that long, you know, but really I'd like to see him with somebody else. I think too, like I said, with Matt Smith, when Amy and Rory left and then Clara came in, there was such a shift in his portrayal of the Doctor. And I started to really like Matt Smith a lot when Clara came in. Whereas before I wasn't really a big fan. He was good. He was a really damn good actor, but I wasn't liking his Doctor. I wasn't liking where it was going. And then when Clara came in, he changed so much, and he was starting to be really interesting to me. So I would love to see Clara leave, and I'd love to see maybe even if another companion can come in and just do the same thing for Capaldi. And really, I mean, look at this story. Look what happened with Maisie. I really did enjoy this story without Clara. And I really, like you said, those moments where the Doctor had with Maisie, just talking about saving her life, it was just like, those were the light-up moments. So I think that even if we don't get a new show writer, certainly, hopefully getting somebody in that just gels with him, or they bounce off each other so brilliantly, would be what we need.
Okay. So over the last few weeks, we've been sort of throwing numbers at the episodes as a kind of pseudo rating. How would you throw a number at this one?
Well, I still thought it was kind of like a middle ground episode. It didn't wow me. It didn't underwhelm me, but it was certainly much better than last week's, because the humor wasn't the main focus. It was properly used, I felt. So I would say probably I gave last week's a 5. I would give this one a 6.5.
Okay, I think I gave it a 7 last week. So this one was better. So I don't think I'd give it an 8 though. So I'd have to give it a 7.5. Thank goodness for halves, eh?
Yeah.
Hey, what?
Oh,
hey.
They go a long way. You know, but I do want to say, you know, again, because, you know, credit to, if, you know, if this is Moffat for scoping these people out or somebody else, credit to whomever it is, director, lighting crew, director of photography, key grip, anybody you can think of that has worked on this show. I want to give this show like an 11 out of 10 for its cinematography, because every time I watch it each week, it is really just gorgeous.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. And that was a Catherine Tregana's script, and she's been resisting overtones from Stephen Moffat for some years, apparently, possibly even Russell T Davies as well. I'm not sure about that, but I do know she did some Torchwood previously, but apparently wanted to stay clear of Doctor Who. So it was nice to see a new writer on Doctor Who, and a new female writer on Doctor Who as well. Because, you know, there are a lot of strong writers out there, but it's rare we get a new one. It's rare that we get a lady writer on Doctor Who. Which does seem strange to me. I'm not sure why that is in an industry that is, I wouldn't say dominated by women, because it's not, but there are a lot of women scriptwriters out there. So that they're, I mean, we've got 3 or 4, I think. 5 at the most since 2005. It seems a little bit crazy to me. Hey, over on Twitter, we got a tweet. You can follow us on Twitter. We are @podcast with a K. Regular listener, Luke Olsol, says, thoughts on the well acted and some good dialogue, but incredibly dull. Maisie Williams deserves better. I'm not sure it was incredibly dull at all. I think it went along at a reasonable pace. But Maisie Williams deserves better. Possibly. I don't know. Well, she's off to she'll be in Iceland or Canada or Eastern Europe at the moment filming Game of Thrones. So I don't think she's too concerned about wanting anything better. Your comment about the disguise. This is one for the Game of Thrones fans. She could have done a disguise in her Game of Thrones guise. She's a servant of the many-faced god. I'll let you look that up because it's a bit kind of macabre for the podcast. But there you go. So that's the woman who lived. James isn't here. I generally get the feeling he felt pretty much. He's left a few comments on Facebook threads, and I generally get the feeling that he would have rated it more or less around the same as we have, in that same sort of area. So that's interesting. So we'll go back to the news now. You probably know, we record the podcast, when we do it like this, we usually record it on a Monday. And there has been some big news. Are you aware of this big news, Brian?
I am aware of this big news.
Okay.
Hear it finished strong in the news today.
Okay. God, just strong in the news. David Tennant and Catherine Tate arrive at Big Finish. You heard me right. Yay!
And there was much rejoicing.
The Tenth Doctor and Donna Noble are back in three brand new audio dramas coming in May 2016, next year. No waiting until the end of the year or the following year, as you often do with Big Finish. Actually, next year. What have we got? David Tennant says, this is one of those dream projects where I've spent months pinching myself. I'm covered in bruises, says David. No, it's David Richardson. So nothing from David Tennant. Nick Briggs says, I've enjoyed working with all the Doctors on TV, but David is the only one I'd known before he became the Doctor. I'd worked with him on our Dalek Empire series for Big Finish and had such fun. So along with the excitement of directing new 10th Doctor adventures, I'm so happy to be working with an old chum again. We've got three stories. We've got Technophobia by Matt Fitton, set in London slightly in the future, where mankind is gradually losing its ability to use everyday technology. Could there be an evil force at work? Lovely Jenny Colgan has written Time Reaver, in which the Doctor and Donna arrive on Calibris, an entirely mechanical planet, catch, hitch, fuel fix by pretty much any kind of transportation in existence. It's also a world full of scoundrels where a deadly black market has opened up in a device known only as the Time Reaver. And finally, there's a piece called Death and the Queen by James Goss. Donna is swept along in a fairy tale romance and meets the man of her dreams in the beautiful land of Goritania. But what can possibly go wrong? And why has the Doctor never heard of Goritania? And there's a little video as well, which I would love to play for you, but I can't because I'm not set up to put videos in, of David Tennant and Catherine Tate chatting. This is great news, isn't it? This is like what we've been waiting for since 2010, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we've wanted to see them do certainly even when Chris left, we were thinking the second that he was done, we were hoping that he would make a move to Big Finish so we could still get a couple of stories out of him. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting to see Big Finish getting to play with a lot of the new series stuff now, whereas for many years they weren't really allowed, and then they started doing sneaky references to things, and then eventually started getting monsters and so on, and now they've got their. What is this? This would be their second new series Doctor, because they've already announced the War Doctor.
That's right. Yeah.
So, wow. Which I have to say, I am more excited about the David Tennant one for some obvious reasons. But one of the big reasons is just because, you know, I really... It's weird. Paul McGann gets one story on TV, and I yearn for more, as they say, and then you get the Big Finish plays and it's just brilliant. You get to hear more Paul McGann, but then you get the War Doctor, who gets, you know, one full story and a couple other like cameos and a couple other stories there leading up to it, and I'm content with that. I want the War Doctor to stay lost in the war, because I don't want to know too much about the war, because I'm afraid that the war is just not going to seem as interesting as
But
all
the
the
only way
mystery
to
has
keep the
made it
war
be.
interesting, isn't it? The only way to keep the war interesting is to keep the Doctor out of the war.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I don't know. I also kind of don't even want to know about the war. Like,
yeah.
For instance, when we did see a bit of the war in the 50th, and it just seemed like it was, you know,
a battle.
World War One or World War Two,
yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
just gunfights and ships shooting at each other, you know, and it's just kind of, okay, you know, they talked about this, and I understand this is the last day. Maybe they were down to kind of like the war of attrition on Skaro, just down to the cheapest things that
Well, I
they
think
could
that's the
use
only
to
way you can
fight.
explain it, isn't it, really? Because
Yeah.
it you know, it pales in comparison to, you know, things, you know, all the things we heard during the RTD
Right.
era, like the, you know,
Right.
the Skaro degradations and the could have been king and all that stuff.
Yes. So with David Tennant and Catherine Tate coming back, which I have to say Catherine Tate was a very wise choice, because it'll lend itself well, the dynamic between those two characters, it'll lend itself well to the audio, and you don't have to worry about trying to fit in any of that relationship stuff within the continuity of the show. But I think it's just built for a good dynamic for audio, because you know, clearly his doctor worked very well on TV. Those two worked together as a doctor companion duo. I think, you know, it's a bit like them announcing they got Tom Baker back, you know, after all these years. And even I remember the day when they announced Paul McGann. It's kind of a bit like that. It's like that thing that you've just been hoping for a while. So, yeah, I think it'll be great. I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with them and how they're going to sound, because classic Doctor Who being told through Big Finish gets an update. It gets upgraded. They don't have a budget anymore, you know, but you know, Tennant's era had a budget. Tennant's era could do many of these great things that Big Finish let the past doctors do. So I'm curious to see how they're going to change that. Are they going to try and expand? Are they going to try and tell like a grand, grand story? Or are they just going to fit stories in that just seem like they slot seamlessly within his era? Neither one is really a bad choice. I'm just very curious to see the direction they're going to take.
Yeah, yes, it's certainly interesting. And I think we all want some Chris Eccleston, don't we? But
yes.
Yeah, David Tennant's a more than adequate substitute, as he kind of proved on TV.
Yeah, I would love to see them get Christopher Eccleston. As a matter of fact, I would actually, even if they could get Chris and Matt and David together and do a multi-doctor story, I'm that type of fan that I would just sit there and go, fine, I'll take it. That would be great. I don't care. I love multi-doctor stories. I don't care how corny or cheap they are. I will take it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be cool. But I would love to see Chris back. As a matter of fact, I would love to see Chris back with Billy and John Barrowman. And I would love to see them slot some stories in between the Doctor Dances and Boomtown. You know, because we know a lot happened there. Or even in between Boomtown and Bad Wolf, I would probably more so, because we know, you know, a heck of a lot happened there. And I kind of want to know that. I want to know that more than I want to know the Time War.
Yeah. Well, they dropped a load of BBC book stories in that gap, so
yeah,
there's plenty to do in that gap. Okay, so that's that piece of news. So that's nice and exciting stuff for us Doctor Who fans that we are. Let me just think, there might be one other thing that we can have a quick chat about. I'm going to stick something in the show notes this week. This is the Traffic Experiment version of the Doctor Who theme, which they've called Vashta Narada. It's definitely worth listening to. So I'll put a link to that. It's on YouTube. We've got some news about David Tennant in the Jessica Jones series. Apparently he's utterly terrifying. And there was one other thing. Oh, yeah. I'll just get into a mood if I talk about this. So there's a little bit of Sherlock stuff. Basically, it's going to be shown in cinemas around the world. Including
the Christmas thing?
Yeah, including China. And at the same time, Amanda Abingdon says that she hasn't been on Doctor Who because she suspects that Stephen Moffat wants her to be the first female Doctor. No lack of self-confidence there.
Who's Amanda Abingdon?
She's Martin Freeman's wife, and she's Mary Mostrom in
Sherlock. That one. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And a little bit of bad news, Neville Jason, who played Prince Reinhardt in The Androids of Tara, has died. recently. And there's been a dispute over the release of the Downtime DVD. Did we talk about this last week? No, we didn't.
No.
Okay. So, basically, Mervyn Haseman's granddaughter, Hannah Haseman Hatt, has said that, who's spoken to us on the podcast before, has said that it's come to my attention, the Real Time Pictures and One Media are releasing Downtime, the Doctor Who spin-off film made in 1995 on DVD. This is being done so without my consent or permission as the executor of the Haseman Literary Estate and thus copyright holder of Lethbridge Stewart, Professor Travers, The Great Intelligence and The Yeti. I should have been approached over this. Attempts to negotiate have fallen on deaf ears and my rightful claim has been refuted by the producers. I have now been forced to take legal action to protect the copyright of my grandfather Mervyn Haseman after their refusal to renegotiate an agreement made 20 years ago for a film made for straight to video release only. That's there's been no announcement from Real Time that they are postponing it, but there is most definitely a dispute there. And another thing about Downtime is that it introduces Kate Lethbridge Stewart. Now, I have been mulling over a few things recently and trying to get my head around Doctor Who Series 9 and kind of the Moffat era in general, I suppose, in some ways. And something has struck me. I think I probably put it most... I probably put it best on Twitter, actually. Did you see this? Will you save me a job looking for it?
I'm sorry, see which?
No, you didn't see it. Okay, then. So basically, it strikes me that there is a... I basically don't care about UNIT.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, yes, I did see this, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got a UNIT two-parter coming up with Kate Stewart and Osgood and the woman out of Bugs and I don't know who else. And basically, I said on Twitter this morning, having been given this some sort, ultimately don't care if UNIT has been infiltrated by Zygons, find characters either 2D, annoying, or both. I didn't have enough characters for inept in there either. You know, Kate Lethbridge Stewart is absolutely useless as a leader. I don't know. She's like a bad teacher who has no control over her class. Osgood, Osgood is okay. Yeah, she's a, kind of like a fan avatar, if you like. But the portrayal irritates me. The actress herself irritates the bejesus out of me. That little happy dance that she did, who gives a flying whether you can do a happy dance or not? You know, that's just why share that with me? I don't want to know about your goddamn happy dance.
Yeah.
Ingrid Oliver, keep it to yourself. And, you know, we've seen UNIT kind of baffled by a bit of timey-wimey stuff in the sky. We've had the whole thing with the Day of the Doctor and the Zygons. What else have we had with UNIT? Did you have something last year with UNIT?
Yeah, they were in the Cybermen story. Where Osgood, you know, died.
Yeah. Or did she? And yeah, so you know, we've clearly got from the trailer for the Zygon invasion a collection of there is a bit of a immigration story going on, theme going on here, and an integration thing, and an Islamic State situation with the clip that we saw of Osgood reading a statement at a desk in front of a camera with a Zygon stood either side of a, like some sort of Middle Eastern conflict allegory going on there. And we were wondering why Doctor Who was going out at 8:30-ish. I think we have found our answer, to be honest with you. I'm really struggling with the whole idea of this UNIT incarnation. If you know, everyone loves UNIT, and I think a lot of us were disappointed that rather than bring back UNIT, Russell T Davies opted to create Torchwood. But on the face of it, looking at this, I'd rather have Torchwood than UNIT.
Yeah, well, Torchwood gave you characters, which, in my opinion, you know, while they were all kind of overly sexual, they were interesting, and you started to care about them. I don't care about these unit characters. I
No.
think since the show came back, they lost their footing with unit, and it's not just Moff's era, it's Russell's era as well,
Yeah, back in
because
the Sontaran stratagem, yeah.
even before that,
And Planet of the Dead.
Aliens of London,
Aliens
you
of
know,
London, yeah.
like you get unit, but you don't get unit as a character, I guess is probably the best way to
Yeah.
say it. There's no one to feel attached to or feel interested in or want to see them again. And you know, I want to like Kate Stewart, but the last story that she was in, she was completely useless. I mean, she's the leader of UNIT. It seems she's the leader of UNIT. That's how they built her up. But she was utterly useless. That she relied on everything with Clara to tell her what the hell was going on. Osgood, and I said this about not last week's episode, but the episode the week before. I can't remember the one, but you know the. Under the water, under the lake, or whatever that was, the second part of that story. I am tired of the Doctor running into characters that are essentially fans, that are us, you know, that hero worship him, that are so amazed to be in the TARDIS and see the TARDIS and be next to him. And, you know, Osgood, every episode coming back dressed as a cosplayer of the Doctor, is increasingly dull and boring and really unnecessary. And when they killed her last year, I can say with 100% without a doubt that I sat there and instead of going good, I went, well, great, what outfit's she coming back in next? You know, because you know she's not dead, or the Zygon one was coming back, or somehow you were going to see this person again. And it wasn't exactly like they killed Benton. You know, if they had killed Benton, I would have screamed my head off at the TV, you know, but there's just not characters that are interesting. Kate Stewart started interesting. I liked her in the beginning. I thought this is okay. I didn't really necessarily need a familial relationship to the Brigadier, but fine. It's cool. But you know, I liked, oh man, I can't remember all their names. I liked the guy that was in charge in the Christmas invasion. I wanted to
That
say
was a good
Mace.
unit. That's the only time they've got unit right for me.
Yes, and I liked a lot of them in there, and I don't think that they should have killed so many of them, and certainly should have brought back the surviving ones, you know. But then even the Suntaran stratagem, and I think maybe he was Mace, maybe the guy in the Christmas invasion was Mace. I can't remember anymore because it didn't seem important to remember their names because they never came back. But I thought he was even kind of an okay leader too, you know. And I liked the fact I liked those two guards that went and got, basically had clones made of themselves, and then took Martha as well. Just you know, I didn't. Even if they came back and they were constantly the village idiot version of UNIT, you know, among a strong team, fine. Okay, I could have dealt with that. I don't know. It's just, you're going to build up UNIT. You're going to use UNIT. You got to understand that UNIT isn't, you know, you don't need UNIT if you just want a military group. I'll put it to you that way. UNIT are people that we should care about. Military groups are people that you should just be killing off left and right because they're just there to serve the purpose of a military group.
Totally.
UNIT is a character. They need character. And Moffat is not right for character. And you know, I'm sorry, you know, if we get a lot of flack for slagging off Moffat, but he's not. He doesn't know how to do characters. He knows how to do caricatures, and that is something I'm sick of.
Okay.
All right.
So we've got UNIT coming back, but and we've got a two-parter. And it'll be interesting to see how this two-parter works because we've had two-parters so far. One was a continuation of the same story. The other one switched locations, and this is an all-out Earth invasion story by all accounts. So it'll be interesting to see how it works. I am told that there have been several considerable rewrites and some reshoots on this story as well, but I'm not going to go into any details there. So,
Christian.
Brian, is that you? That's just a reference to an old podcast that we did when our guest was Omega. Seemed quite apt this week, so we'll maybe re-release that one during the week on Audio Boom. As the last time we released a podcast from 2007, it did better than that week's podcast.
Oh, wow.
We don't know either, but there you go. Thank you, dear listener. And that's all from us this week. We'll be back next week. There might be three of us. We might go live, even. We'll see how it goes. Until next time, it's goodbye.